This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. I'm Richard Woodward, and joining me to talk about the year that was 2020 for Ipswich Town is Graham Mack from Radio Suffolk, Andy Warren of the EADT and Kings of Anglia, and our own Joe Fares. We hope you enjoy it.
In August, Graham, it starts to get real. We've got friendlies. We actually have football. We had, you know, live streams on Facebook. Cambridge, West Ham, Spurs, Cole Ewan, some kind of weird mini tournament. At this point, Graham, are you just delighted to have football back? Football in Ipswich, because the Premier League obviously kept going, but are you just delighted to have stuff back? You know, you're just a human being now rather
than definitely. When we got a date for the season, and we knew we'd have the first match day program in September. It was started with the League Cup, didn't it? The League Cup game felt like right. Excellent. It was obviously very, very different, but we were used to football without supporters by then. It was just the first time we were witnessing Ipswich Town without supporters. I remember watching the Tottenham friendly as well and thinking, it's great to see them back. And obviously things started well, but yeah, it felt good to be back in the old routine then, for sure.
And starting to have tangible things to talk about, because we talked about the EFL stuff and the ending of the season. It's all kind of, as I say, it's all panto. And now we've got transfer rumours, albeit not a huge amount about that. Fixture lists, new kits. End of August, we've got this triple signing. Graham, I'll get your thoughts on this as well. It took a while. And then three in one day, Hawkins, Ward and Cornell. Your sense about those?
All three. I was fine with a little bit concerned about the fact that Hawkins hadn't scored a goal the previous season, but I could see why he'd been brought in as kind of a different type of option up top. The Cornell signing, obviously didn't blow me away, and I wasn't really sure whether Town needed another keeper. I think they had, the likes of Harry Wright and Percy Beck under Thomas Holy. Stephen Ward, though, I thought was an excellent signing, and I think maybe he's tailed off in the same way that the team has, but I don't think you could really vote against that signing when he came in.
Has Ward got a stature about him, Andy? Have you spoken to him that you can tell he's been there and done that?
Yeah, you can tell that he's been he's been a lot higher. He's played international football. He's played a lot of Premier League football. He carries himself like that kind of guy. And I felt the same as Graham when that deal got done. They'd had a dance with Luke Garbutt all summer, which obviously didn't end up happening for Ipswich. I would imagine he probably regrets that not taking that was what was there for him. But then if you go and they moved quickly after that, they moved quickly. Brought Stephen Ward in, and he ticked a lot of boxes, as did Cornell and Hawkins. They were kind of like squad filler, weren't they? They were holes, slightly different types that maybe filled in a couple of gaps without blowing you away. And that's what that day felt like. They kind of just filled out the squad with what was missing and retool and go again. That's what it felt like that day to me.
Into September and we've got actual football, actual matches. I do need to just preface this, and I'll go to Joe on this as well. Here's some quotes from the press cuttings that I've managed to gather in doing actual proper research. Stuart Taylor: pre-season was good, but mistakes must be eradicated. Lambert: the owner's more hands-on involvement benefits everybody. Lambert: do I look as if I feel under pressure? Lambert: if you're in the shirt, it's yours to lose. I think previously Matt Gill had said consistency of style and identity is going to be vital. Do those give you reassurance, having ended the season with Coventry and a 1-0 defeat and an 11th point finish? Where were you on Paul Lambert before a ball was kicked? And did any of these quotes fill you with any confidence that this season was going to be any different? And right on cue, here was what is this show?
Service, isn't it?
I need to text my wife.
I mean, blooming hell. I mean, we can have a very
even bought well. My bottle opener as well, but I did actually have one.
Goodness me, that's.
But
Do you want to repeat the question by then?
No, I remember. It was all the stuff that we had been wanting to hear, effectively, and wanting to see, because it was, like I say, the biggest frustration for me. It wasn't, like I say, the people talk about the rotation of players, but for me, it was just a rotation of style, shape, play, and sort of when you sort of listen to sort of some of what the players were saying, it was a case of almost we find out the team at sort of Saturday at 1 o'clock and we haven't done any work on that shape a week and things, and it's just sort of basic stuff. And so it's like a good thing to hear it, but it's almost gone sort of too far the other way now, isn't it, where we're so tied to something that just doesn't suit the players available. But it was what I wanted to hear, and it seemed the right thing to do. It's a worry though that when an owner of Marcus Evans, like I say, this is somebody who, when he first bought the clubs, having to have somebody sit next to him and basically talking through a game of football like you're talking to a three-year-old, from what I understand, that he is now in a position where he's telling a manager who's played for some big clubs and some big games and some big tournaments and also spent a spell in Germany. Apparently so. He mentioned it today as well, I noticed. But he's telling this manager what he needs to be doing. So it's like, why are you paying a manager sort of top money on a 5-year deal in League One if you and presumably Lee O'Neill as his football advisor are the ones dictating to him what he should be doing? It seems a little bit arse about the face.
Well, whatever happens, Marcus Evans' influence works, doesn't it? Because in the league, there's 3 2-0 wins. There is a pretty convincing victory over Bristol Rovers in the League Cup as well. So Marcus Evans in, Andy. We talked about pattern of play constantly on the pod last year, and it felt the consistency of selection was there. We've got Aaron Drinan who just came into that lone striker role and it just seemed to work for him, and sadly got injured. But even this centre-back pairing of Nciala and Wilson that was given constant selection, everything just seemed settled and stable and paid off, didn't it?
Yeah, briefly it certainly did. I'm with Joe on the debate over last season. It was more systems than players for me, and you could not get a more kind of 180 shift in that now, because I don't know, like, if you watch the team warm up before the game, they do a drill where they stand in their shape. I think they've actually stopped doing it now because they cottoned on that the opposition had been watching it, but they stand exactly in their shape as they're going to play. Stuart Taylor drops the ball and they pass it around, do their patterns of play, and then the striker hammers it into an empty net at the end. And I led to believe
they run off celebrating.
James Norwood does. I'm led to believe that was training for... They did that to death over the summer. So they really, really have been trying to hammer that home. And you're right, at times it did work, but it was particularly runners from midfield that I was enjoying. That Teddy Bishop was the Teddy Bishop that we all want to see. John Nolan started the season well. Obviously, Gwion Edwards had his spell after that. The goals were coming, not from the central striker. Although, as you say, Drinan came from nowhere and just seemed to fit, didn't he? He just seemed to fit with everybody else without having the goal threat that maybe a Norwood head, like a headless chicken Norwood might have had at times. It did seem like something was really, really coming together. But then, sorry if I'm jumping this on a bit too far, Rich, but it's almost like the similar that the previous season, where it's coming together. Adversity, bang. They lost it. Was it Doncaster?
Yeah.
And from there, it just sends in a wobble, just like the Accrington and Rotherham defeats the previous seasons.
It might be something you've picked up on more, Andy, but when I was in the ground for the Portsmouth game, the players were quite lively and their sort of tails were up and the manager was busy on the sideline. But as soon as we conceded that first goal, it was so quiet after that. After that, the only person you could hear after that was Luke Chambers. And it's just the manager that almost just looks so subdued. Like, it's almost like, okay, I'm going to give it one more big go. And then when he loses, I can't.
Yeah, he's such a different character on the touchline to the one that kind of bounced in November 2018, isn't he? In terms of energy, but the season started like that in these empty stadiums with cardboard cutouts. Everyone was so loud. All the players were so loud. Lambert was loud. Stuart Taylor was loud. Matt Gill, in particular, was loud. But of late, things had just tailed off, and it was getting more and more quiet at games. Even Luke Chambers, who is really good value to hear what he says during a game normally, really vocal, even he was starting to get quiet. And that Portsmouth game felt like, with some fans back in the crowd, they were able to lift themselves a little bit and realise they were putting on a show, maybe. But then, like Joe said, once they conceded a goal, it dropped away again. And that has worried me since around the middle of November, maybe early November. The noise has gone. The drive has gone, and that's a real concern to me, and they need to find that from somewhere.
The regression back to what we were seeing.
The other thing that's gone as well is the consistent team selection's completely gone. They've not been helped by that. You have to kind of, I think, throw the manager a little bit of rope. He's brought it up a lot, the fact that he's been without so many players, but he's right. He really hasn't been helping that front at all. I think one of the big losses was that when the Bishop, Nolan and Dizel midfield got broken up, things started to kind of fall apart a little bit then. I remember when Sears got his two goals on the opening day as well. A week prior to that, I'd been on the radio and I predicted that Sears was going to get 20 plus goals. So when he got those two, I was like, yes, come on. And then that completely fell apart. So he really, really hasn't been helped. I think I mentioned right at the start as well, games like Sunderland, Lincoln, decisions going against them. And I know you could say that evens out throughout a season and it does happen to everybody. But there was just a series of events where I just think their luck has not been in this season at all.
Sadly, those decisions, they came in games where Ipswich didn't look like scoring goals particularly. So if you're struggling to score, this was the argument in the Championship that I think they defended okay under Lambert in the Championship for the vast majority of it, but they couldn't score. And eventually, you're putting so much pressure on your defence to keep it out because you can't score enough goals to win a game 2-1. You're putting that much pressure on that ultimately Toto Nsiala does give a silly penalty away against Lincoln because he's had to defend so well for 80 minutes. Just the concentration just goes. And that on a broader theme, that's been the what rather than the defending, it's the lack of punch that's worried me in terms of why they can't win these games.
That's I haven't looked at the stats this season, but I remember looking at them last season and it was something silly that if we scored the first goal, we went on to win. Almost, I think it was like 13 games we scored the first goal in, and we sort of won 10 and drew three or lost three. And then, when the 13 games where we didn't score the first goal, it was like 1-1, lost 10 or something like this. Or it was that I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was silly numbers like that both ways. And it just shows that the defence they're just walking on a tightrope the whole game, knowing that if they concede a goal, basically it's game over. And it's the same now as it was then. I know we've come back to beat sort of Shrewsbury the other week, but it's, like I say, it's, they're few and far between. When we go 1-0 down, and like I say, the attack did not get us out of any holes, really.
I was going to say, it's mitigating circumstances. There was some of that luck that Graham was talking about, that free cone goal that got us back into the Shrewsbury game, because we were huffing and puffing in that one. I mean, Graham, I just wanted to, whether the, you know, the September we've got, we're top of the league, Lambert wins manager of the month, I believe, or is that in October, possibly? Were you having people on saying, this is our season, this is our year, or was there still...
No, I wouldn't say that. I think the phone-ins have been, they've been quite busy all season. Obviously, they've been a lot busier of late. Nobody was really coming on saying, oh, we got the manager wrong last season. I've always felt, actually, that even with the good start this season, because of the way things ended last season, because of those strange series of interviews and the five-year deal at the turn of the year, I always felt like some people were just waiting for, we'd just been waiting for that one defeat, that one occasion for it to go wrong against a more worthy opponent, as it were, one of the so-called top teams in the division, for the wheels to potentially fall off, not just with the team, but with kind of the people listed in as well. And straight away off the back of Doncaster, it was almost like some people had forgotten, you know, the previous few weeks when Tam were doing really well and they got themselves back up the top. But the minute things started to go wrong, it's like, right, we can kind of have a go at them again, is what it felt like.
It reminds me of Mick's last season, where we won the first five games and we lost at home to Fulham, who were like the title favourites, and we were like booed off the pitch after we were still probably in the top two of the Championship, and we sort of booed off the pitch because we lost at home to Fulham. And I think it was just at that point you sort of realise too much damage is done. And I say we only follow Ipswich, so we don't know all the clubs. Andy might know a bit more from his time elsewhere, but I just cannot remember a time where a manager's been so far gone, effectively, that they've managed to come back and turn it around from there.
Yeah, it does have sense, does it?
And I also think we're a bit of a knife edge, though, because I do get the sense, while I genuinely, if that's true, some people were kind of waiting for a 4-1 Doncaster defeat so they could get the knives out again. I think we've reached a really interesting point in recent weeks. After, you know, we've had four halves of football at Portman Road since fans returned. Town have been booed off for three of those, but they got over the line against Burton in the end. And I kind of sense that if there can be a victory in the next game against one of the, you know, so-called bigger rivals, or we can get one or two of those, I think things will start to turn, because you look at the results we've had recently. The Shrewsbury victory, that phone-in felt like a defeat. We've just scraped over the line against Shrewsbury. They can't do anything. This Ipswich Town team is rubbish. Shrewsbury've gone on to beat Hull and Lincoln. People are starting to see this.
They're currently 1-0 up at Doncaster with 10 minutes left.
There we go, live reports. This is good. It's such a strange division this year. It really is. It was much more predictable last season. I think it's so strange. Town are actually the most predictable team in the division, because you know that if you're ninth or below, you're going to get beat by Ipswich Town. If you're above that, you're probably going to win. You're going to at least get a point out of the game. Everybody else is so unpredictable. Hull have shown that in recent weeks. They've gone off the rails. People are starting to think, actually, we can just a couple of wins against those teams above, then it might turn. If Paul Lambert can get them soon, then I think he can possibly turn it around.
Is Fleetwood that game, coincidentally, on, because we've lost, I mean, we're skipping around now, which is fine, I'm totally fine. Northampton and Wimbledon is now postponed, but yeah, let's say we negative tests and all that kind of stuff and we come back. Fleetwood, I guess, aren't probably at that point going to be in the top 10, maybe, I suspect. But
no, I don't know whether Fleetwood is seen as one of those teams now. I think it's
scalp, I guess, for
I think it's interesting the way the table's sort of fallen because of the fixtures. It's a very strange season with regards to teams missing games. And after we beat Burton, Lambert sort of came out quite bullish and sort of, we're 2 points off second, or wherever we were in the league, we're fifth with all these injuries. But then obviously the weekend happened and we're now effectively dropped down to sixth. But none of the teams above us, two of them have got games in hand on us and they're above us. And we could come out of this two game postponement being ninth or 10th in the league without really having any games in hand on the teams above us. So where the league table was sort of maybe artificially doing him a favour previously, it now may be almost artificially hurting him as well on the other side of it. Like I say, if we're 10th when we play on January the 2nd, whoever that is, and we lose that game and we're stuck down in 10th, maybe that is a point where Evans starts to worry about the top six.
But we're close to kind of finishing off the season in terms of the results and stuff like that, which is fine. There's a few bits and pieces of news that I just wanted to chuck at you and get some views on. We've obviously missed out on some of the loan signings, McGuinness and Keenan Bennett's join, obviously in the October window, I guess, as it was. The injuries start to kick in. We've already mentioned Drinan, and then Norwood is out in October. Skuse is has been out and is expected to be back for a month with a minor op and not been seen since. In October, Ken Vincent Young was still a month away. We've got the League One, League Two rescue package. We've got Project Restart. I mean, we've talked about these on the pods as well. Lambert was the manager of the month for September. I've mentioned that. But there's two bits of news here, which I guess if, before we kind of get into the more angsty stuff, Luke Chambers becomes, I think he's either the top 10 or 9th all-time appearance maker for ITFC. And also at a similar time, Kieran Dyer returns as under 23's coach. Andy, you said before that Luke Chambers is someone you want to hear from. I mean, a true servant who possibly doesn't get the credit from the wider supporter base that perhaps he deserves. He's always going to be, the context is always going to be an asterisk against his name in some people's eyes, isn't it? Which is his fault.
I think so. I think we've heard about Luke. Other people have said of Luke that he takes too much, has taken too much on his shoulders at times, has taken too much responsibility. He's the guy that dishes out all the players' tickets for like family and friends tickets. He's the guy that does that. He organises like social stuff. But I think he also takes on too much of Ipswich Town's baggage on his shoulders. Yeah, he's been here the whole time. He's been here this is 9th season, I think. So he does come with some baggage of the past, but for me, he's been one of the most consistent players that Ipswich have got for the three and a half years that I've been covering the team. Be that at centre back, be that at right back, I think he's been an excellent servant to the club. And while he'll never be revered in the way that Matt Holland, Marcus Stewart, and then obviously the boys of 81 will be, you can't knock the service that man's given to the club and how much he cares and how much of both his life and his self he has given to the club. It's genuine. There's a lot of bravado there with Luke. He's got a layer of there's an ego there, but it's a likable one. And I personally think he's been an excellent servant to the club over a long time.
I second that completely. I saw after the Charlton and the Hull defeats, a fair few people saying, "Where's our captain? Why isn't he, fronted up and facing the press at this point?" You could never accuse Luke Chambers of not, standing up and being counted. I completely echo that. And also, if you have to pick like a player of the season, he's one of those Luke Chambers. He really gets injured. He's always so many potential contenders for player of the calendar year. You kind of think, oh yeah, but they missed that chunk of the season. They missed that month because of injury. Luke Chambers is always there. I sometimes think you talk about him taking on too much. I think he feels losses and he feels the hardship too much as well, because you've got to be upset with the defeat. You've got to be upset when things go wrong for your club. But when Ipswich Town don't get a result, it really, really hurts Luke Chambers.
You can see this club,
100%. This club means so much, and there's nobody that will want to succeed that the club to succeed more than Luke Chambers.
And Joe, Kieran Dyer returning at the under 23s, and what that might mean longer term. Again, I've got involved in some Twitter debates about Kieran Dyer's merits, and a lot of people want to put Kieran Dyer down as well. But by the sounds of it, he's really well thought of behind the scenes. Really excellent article about him and Terry Butcher on TWTD, wasn't there? What, as someone who follows a lot of the academy goings on, what's your thoughts on Dyer returning?
Well, I think it's great personally. You this player with all this experience at the sort of very top level, sort of coming back and I assume basically working for nothing effectively in the academy, just because he wants to try and help out Ipswich Town Football Club is a huge thing. And like I say, you talk about the interview with Terry Butcher. Like I say, these are two guys that have achieved huge amounts in the game, and they are back here because they love Ipswich Town Football Club, and they talk about the Ipswich way. And like I say, it's just like I say, I speak to a few of the sort of parents of the academy players, sort of as part of what I do, and they all say like he's come in there, he's really working the players hard, the sort of fitness levels, the professional levels. He's not coming there just to sort of put his feet up as the under-23s manager. He's getting really heavily involved with both the 23s and the 18s and the 16s below them. And I say, I know it's not a results game at that age, but look at the results for the 23s and the 18s since he's come back in. And like I say, I don't know who's pushing it and I don't know why, but he's there with an eye on the future manager job at Ipswich Town. He wouldn't be here doing this job if he didn't think he had some hope of getting that job.
And again, it's embracing history, which historically we've seemingly tried to avoid doing, which I just don't get. And I would be disappointed if the Ipswich job came up in the next calendar year, if Dyer wasn't on the long list, I think I'd be a bit disappointed. Whether he's ready,
I'd be disappointed if he wasn't on the short list for it. And like I say, there's some fans saying, oh, well, he needs to drop down the leagues. It's like, we're in League One now. This is the level people need to drop down to. We're not a top-end championship club now picking up players from there. Yeah. This is where we are now.
He's an impressive bloke. He's really impressed me in the kind of the dealings that I've had with him. I got to know him a little bit. He's really got something about him. He's taking this seriously. Like Joe said, this isn't just a hobby for him. This is something he really wants and really believes that he can do. Whether right now he'd be ready for it, I don't know. And he would definitely need some experience alongside him. But I could see him managing Ipswich in the not too distant future, certainly. And I think he would be someone that everybody would get behind, and he would be someone that could help move this plan that we've heard so much about. He could be someone that could move that forward.
I'd hate to go and see him manage someone else. Because I think as soon as he was out of the building, I don't think we'd ever, like I say, people talk about, oh, Tony Mowbray would be a good manager for us. Realistically, if you don't get them at the start, the chances of the stars aligning at the point when you need a new manager and they're available become slim to none.
Yep. Let's finish off the year in terms of the news. We've obviously, if you want to hear about the results, then I can recommend the Kings of Anglia podcast, is it? And the Blue Monday podcast from the last, obviously, few weeks and months. But this is when things start to, you know, we've talked about the Doncaster defeat. And then things, you know, we've then got Hull and Charlton effectively, haven't we? Lambert in November quoted as saying things are in a better place than when he took over, and then after Hull, there's no confidence problem. I think some of the stuff we've talked about before suggests otherwise. And then we've got this Blue Action banner, Graham, that appears at Playford Road, and then there's one on the perimeter fence. What's your view on? I guess everyone, as long as it's respectful, has a right to protest. But Blue Action has obviously been very pro Lambert early on, and Lambert had ingratiated himself with them. Quite a symbolic moment for you, that.
I'm not sure whether it was a symbolic moment, because like I said earlier, I do think how things have gone in recent weeks that Paul Lambert kind of has a chance. He still has a chance to turn it around. It was a big moment in terms of it was kind of the first visible protest other than him getting booed off and stuff. We did ask to speak to kind of Blue Action for them to come on the radio at the time, but they didn't particularly want to. How many people were kind of behind that? I'm not so sure, but I think for Paul Lambert that would have been water off a duck's back, really. Although when he comes on interviews post match and says he doesn't feel pressure and things like that, I think the signs are that he clearly does. But whether he's affected by banners at training grounds, I'm not so sure.
More offended by questions about player photos at Oxford, eh, Andy? Wink, wink, nudge. And then there's the protest that's arranged for the Swindon game. Whether that happens or not, I don't know. Then we have the press release to be careful what you wish for, which is a week later is kind of is apologized for and all that kind of stuff. And there's just lots of silliness, guys, isn't there, for quite a while. And then you know, the Dazelle 3-year contract thing, where I mentioned before, comes out, and you think, that's good news. Evans does the 20K check for the NHS and stuff like that. You just think, we really don't help ourselves, you know. It's all a bit frustrating and all a bit panto, as I said, and I guess it is the season and all that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, we're then seeing kind of these results, aren't we? We've mentioned, you know, the Doncaster situation. Then there's Sunderland away, which, Graham, you alluded to the luck in that match. Didn't mention the Lincoln defeat, which, again, perhaps unfortunate circumstances, but you've got the sending off for Nolan. But out of all the cups at this point as well, Hull, Charlton, draw with Oxford, which was just really, really dull and really uninspiring. And then kind of this, you know, we talked about the Burton win in February, then Plymouth go away and, fortunate, perhaps there's some more luck evening itself out, perhaps. Although I think that sending off was probably fair enough for Plymouth.
And we should have had a penalty.
But then followed it up with, and then we're kind of yo-yoing up and down, aren't we? Defeat to Portsmouth, predictable. Burton got there in the end, and now we're kind of back into the C-word kind of panto. But you don't, I guess my question to all of you before we've kind of got some questions, just to sum up the year, where do we stand?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
I mean, Graham, you're kind of glass half full, which is excellent tonic.
I really wasn't. I wasn't a few weeks ago, but okay. Results in this league. Shrewsbury have completely turned the season on its head for me.
They sacked the manager after we beat them, though, didn't they? So they have had a change.
Yeah, but I just look at the results of the beaten top teams. It's given me hope. It's given me hope that
everyone's as bad as we are.
Yeah, and the teams at the top are going to drop more points in town. Just if they could just get a couple of wins against these other top teams, that there is potential for them to sneak in. I did say at the start of the season, somewhere in the playoffs is where I'd like to think Ipswich Town might finish. And a couple of weeks ago, I said there's just absolutely no chance. But the way things have gone off late, I still think there's an opportunity, especially with players coming back for town. I think, although it's not great at all what's happened at the moment, and we're gonna lose some games due to the pandemic, it might not be the worst time in the world for Ipswich Town not to be playing football. And when we get into the new year with a couple of players coming back, they could really have a go at this.
Yeah, Andy, the injuries, you know, Graham's mentioned that as well. And in terms of where do we stand, you can't discount this just huge, massive injury list. The fact that Jim Henry, the sports science, is it, or fitness coach is now is kind of whatever is it both okay is kind of Zoom consultant now or whatever that situation is. But where do you stand? Do you think if you, Downs coming back, maybe Vincent Young starting to
Ward? I don't really know why, but I do feel a little bit more positive than I did a few weeks ago. I'm still struggling to feel that they can turn it around to the extent that they're going to need to, both on the pitch and sort of in the court of public opinion as well. But for some reason, I am starting to feel that a little bit more positive. But the overall feeling is that they still haven't answered the questions that were left over from last season. So it just feels still in limbo for me. My opinion remains kind of floaty, limbo land, that I haven't had the questions answered that I wanted answered from hanging over last season. But I do also hope that Flynn in particular coming back, Vincent Young's a new dimension. If they can get back, and even someone like Gwion Edwards, who hit a nice little run of form, didn't he, scoring goals, that they can maybe get something going in the new year once they can get that team. Because I'm not sure Lambert's put the team out on the pitch that he would choose to play every week at all this season.
Joe, you climbed off the fence on Lambert quite a while ago. Are you taking any positives, or are you? Yeah, I don't want to put words in Graham or Andy's mouth there. But are you able to see the bigger picture and think that things might improve? Or are you still thinking the manager still just doesn't convince you enough to suggest that better times around the corner?
I think the issue for me is that the manager doesn't convince me. But on the flip side, if you can put out Kane Vincent-Young, Gwion Edwards, Teddy Bishop, Flynn Downs and James Norwood, those five are going to go into the team and make any team in this league better. And with those five, I don't think we'll become a better organised team or a more functional team. We'll just become a better team by virtue of having better players. And sort of, like I say, I'm not in with Ipswich Town just for this season for us to try and go up. It's a long-term thing that I want us to become established back. Well, I suppose the height of our ambitions is a sort of top-end championship team. And I just don't see that the manager is the one that is going to be able to do that, even if he might be able to push us into the top six this season with the quality of play we have in this. Because we have a... I say we have quality players for this league, but as of next season, it's just going to get more difficult with regards to the salary cap. We're going to lose a huge amount of players in the summer. It's unavoidable that we do that. And where do we go from there? If Lambert gets us to fifth, sixth, because Shrewsbury go on a good run and they beat all the top teams and Peterborough keep dropping points, that we end up being a top six team. We play in the playoffs, we lose because the team's better organised than we are. And then we end up back in this league next season with a worse team. Is Lambert the manager to lead us forward? And for me, he's just not. So it's not a case of wanting to lose so he gets fired. But I think that, like I say, you just, that Shrewsbury game, had we lost that game there, and it did feel like a defeat, what would the mood of the stadium been sort of by the time we played sort of Burton? Would that have been enough for almost to flip that game on its head and have us lose that game?
Yeah. To be honest, guys, I've got these questions, and thank you for sticking with us, by the way, as well. Because I think I said to Graham and Andy and to Joe that we'll be about an hour, and I don't know whether there are clocks in your houses that you've been kind of looking at, but we're
clocking in the top corner of the screen. 35.
I really like that we've ended at a point of where there's a bigger picture, Graham. I think that you've
I think your timing's been really good, because, like I say, I think if you'd have done this 2 or 3 weeks ago,
our podcast
this would have been the podcast of doom. It really would. But maybe it's because it's Christmas.
We're bringing joy and goodwill. Let's do. I've asked the guys in advance. Just a 6 or 7, is it, questions or scores out of 10 for stuff. The best win of 2024 for you. Let's start in the kind of order clockwise from me. Graham, your favourite win of 2020?
I think I'm going to say 4-1 at Blackpool, and I'm going to say I'm having Blackpool down as a top side now, given their form. So Town have actually beaten two of the top teams now, because they've beaten Accrington, who, if they win all their games in hand, they go top of the league, and they've beaten Blackpool as well. Town were just really, really clinical, weren't they, against Blackpool that day? Bishop and Edwards on song. It was this really nice purple patch of the season as well. Sadly, those two players are injured now, but where might Town be had Guyon Edwards stayed fully fit, had Teddy Bishop stayed fully fit for a longer period of time? I think at that stage, was Bishop in double figures in terms of starts, which I never thought we'd see again at one point in the season? So yeah, 4-1 at Blackpool this season is my win of the year.
Andy?
I've also got that one written down, but in the interest of making things a bit different, I really enjoyed the win at Tranmere back in
is
that January or was that February?
February, I think.
Back to last season, I really enjoyed that game. The manner that they did it, it was a late goal. Fans on the
goal down as well.
Exactly, that was a really good one. And at the time, that was yet another. Yeah, it was a beach, wasn't it? Forgotten about the state of that place, but that was maybe another of the false dawns that we can look back on as, because that game felt like that could be a kick, a real kick for something. It wasn't, but at the time it was great. Really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed Tranmere away. That was a good, and Liverpool, I think we stayed over there and had a night out there. That was good. Joe, winner of the season, of winner 2020 for you.
Well, I'd like to firstly point out that I did say to Rich, shall we send our answers in so we don't all say the same thing? Because I also have Blackpool away written down.
That's fine. See,
but it just felt like we'd had that sort of poor game at Milton Keynes, but we just sort of bounced back to life, and it was a really impressive win. Good goals from sort of players all over the pitch, and it felt like a lot of people were saying, oh, they're a decent team, their form. Sort of their position in the table doesn't sort of show how decent the team they are. And we went there and beat them, and all of a sudden those people then said, oh yeah, but look at them, they're down the league. But as Graham was saying, they're a good side, and that was a really good win there.
Favourite goal? Again, we'll start with Joe so that you don't feel like everyone else has given the answer first. I mean, there might be not other answers. So what I don't want to have to do is people going off and having to, oh yeah, do you remember that? That goal against so-and-so. What was your favourite goal?
I went for Teddy Bishop's goal against Gillingham. We'd had a couple of bad defeats, the sort of Doncaster game, and it was a game at home where we hadn't played that well. Well, we'd done okay in the first half, but it was a sort of goal which we're not seeing now, where you've got six or seven men in the box. This is sort of 2-3 minutes left in the game, and sort of Chambers is up on one wing, crossing the ball in. It ends up at Stephen Ward, so your fullbacks, your 35-year-old fullbacks, I should say, are pushed on right into the edge of their box, and it comes back. It's a really, really nice finish, and like I say, we were trying to win the game and getting men forward.
Yep. Andy?
I'm going to go with the very first goal of 2020. James Norwood at Wickham, from that quick free kick from Luke Garbutt from the left. You could see James sort of wink, nudge, come on, Alan Judge, put that ball down, cross it. That's a little bit of me, that goal. A clever, really clever goal. Really enjoyed that. And at that point, you thought, well, hang on, 5-year contract for the manager, winning away, I think Wickham were top at the time, live on Sky, everything, all of Ipswich Town's problems were being solved in that one moment. And then they went and conceded a silly goal. Will Norris got lobbed again, and it all kind of returned to normal. But for a brief period, it all came together perfectly that day.
Because we rarely score from set pieces these days, it's so enjoyable when we do. But lovely diving header, wasn't it, I think, at the far post. Graham?
I've written down three. Can I have three? I'm going to pick one winner out of these three. But I've got two Norwood goals. James Norwood versus Accrington at Portman Road. And Norwood v Portsmouth in the FA Cup just a few weeks ago. It was just James Norwood saying, look at me, I'm the best finisher at the club. No one else at the club can score goals like this, particularly the one against Portsmouth when Sears just played it through. It was like one touch into Norwood. Lovely little, side past the goalkeeper. But my pick is going to be Armando Dobras against Gillingham in the trophy, which was just a brilliant occasion. And I also enjoyed that match for the fact that Paul Lambert tended not to do pre-match and post-match after trophy games. But because of the manner of the Gillingham game, when all the kids were on the pitch and they put in this display, who turns up post match after the win.
I love this.
And he still moaned, though, didn't he?
And likewise,
we should be playing this competition.
When they won the in the Youth Cup the other week, coming back against Fulham, I noticed in the pre-match presser for the following senior game, he was asked about the win, and Paul Lambert pointed out, well, you know, some of these players that were playing against Fulham, they've been in the first team, and you've got to think about the manager that puts them in there. But yeah, I'll go for Dobber against Gillingham. That was a great occasion.
I can't believe no one's picked Chambers versus Blackpool, so I'm just going to chuck
that one. Very good as well. That was my fourth.
And because I did three versions of that video with the footage. Moving on, I was going to ask for the best signing, but the pool is really very small, so I'm going to skip that.
Georgia
one.
Allen.
Oh, for the ITFC women.
Yeah, hat-trick the other week against Harlow. Georgia Allen.
I was just thinking for the long term. I think David Cornell might actually turn out to be a very good keeper for us.
Do you know what? I tried my best to skip it, and you guys give me answers. It's fine.
My answer was going to be Dazelle's new contract, because I couldn't bring myself to pick any of the others.
And best moment then of 2020 again. Not a massive pool to choose from, Graham.
What have I put down? I think I've put Lambert. Yeah, I've put Lambert turning up post match after the Gillingham win. I just love that. And also the last season ending early. We got rid of it. Thank God.
It's not necessarily a best moment, but I think the one I'll remember this season for was an incident after the Fleetwood game where I made an absolute fool of myself in front of Joey Barton. It was really wet that night, really wet. And like around the edge of Portman Road, the pitch is banked, so it's kind of going up. I went to speak to him after the game, walked up the bank and completely fell flat on my face into the mud. So then I stood up, covered in mud, to interview Joey Barton, and that he loved it, and that's
I've not heard of this yet.
He's probably judged he was a weak character now because of that.
Yeah, probably. We'll hear about that before the January game, but that was my that will be my overriding memory of being a football journalist in the first half of this year, and then obviously being in empty stadiums in the second, which isn't such a good memory.
No. Joe.
More football related in that when sort of Luke Wolfenden scored his first goal for the club against Lincoln at home, gave us 10 points from 5. We were momentarily top of the league in January, and it's like maybe the club does know what it's doing. But the other one is Harley Curtis's late winner against Fulham in the Youth Cup.
Good call. I didn't mention that.
And I'll come to you on this here as well, and that is the tweet that went round of Di Cornell catching the ball wearing one shirt and then throwing it out wearing a different shirt. That was a big moment as well.
That was our own. Yeah, Craig Finbo, I think, was... Well, someone claimed credit for that one, but I think that might have been Craig. Let's merge Player of 2020 and Young Player of 2020, because they may or may not be the same. Joe?
Well, I went for the Player of 2020 because there's very few players that have gone... sort of played enough to sort of get it. And I went for Luke Chambers because I thought he's actually been consistent through the back end of last season and the start of this season. I wonder if Andy pulled all his average ratings out, who it would be, sort of with the provider that they've played enough games. And for the young player, I've gone for Andre Dazelle. I just think Luke Wolfenden's form dipped in January last year and he hasn't recovered it this season. As good as he was sort of for the first half of last season, I don't think he's hit those heights since. So sort of Andre Dazelle as a young player and Luke Chambers as the player.
Andy, have you been pulling your stats as Joe suggested, or was it a bit more of a impromptu thing?
I did do this earlier in the season and Luke was quite high up. I've got the exact same pair down, Luke Chambers as the player and Andre Dazelle as the young player. But the player I've enjoyed watching most, who I'll give it to actually, is Teddy Bishop. I know he's injured now. He didn't play so much first half of the year, but just to see him doing what he can do and a reminder that he's actually quality football player, just got to get him fit. So with a look ahead to 2021 and the hopeful of another good run of fitness for him, let's go Teddy Bishop.
Graham?
Toss up between Dazelle and Chambers. I think Dazelle's kind of stole it towards the end of this year. But Chambers, as we've all mentioned now, the fact that he stays fit and he's very consistent and he puts his heart and soul into it. One of those two, I'll probably give it to Dazelle. Again, a bit like Teddy Bishop, I never thought I'd see Dazelle start double figure games in a season, and he's done that. He's stayed fit, and it's just great to see him being given a run. For young player, because I've gone for Dazelle for the senior player, I've circled two. I think I'm going to give it to Armando Dobra. I know he's not played a great deal, but he excites fans. We're so pleased that he hasn't gone out on loan anywhere and that he's finally maybe shown signs that he might break into the team. Not many players can score goals like he did against Gillingham, albeit, yes, it was a trophy game against weaker opposition. The other one who I've been really pleased for this season, I think he's looked good when he's been involved, is Brett McGavin, particularly in the third round FA Cup clash against Portsmouth. McGavin, yep. But I'm going to say Dobra. First round, sorry. third. Oh, well. I'm just going to say Dobra for that reason. I think when you see Dobra's name on the team sheet, you're like, all right, we're going to be entertained at some point.
I had McGavin down as well, because I think, yeah, he's had a couple of really good appearances and some set pieces that I quite like. Yeah,
set pieces, some very good.
And I had Andre Dazelle as my player, because he just does stuff that no one else in the team, I think, can do. I might do this as an auction for the next few. These are rate someone out of 10. We'll start with Paul Lambert. We'll rate the manager. I'll start at a 5. Anyone higher than a 5?
Yeah, I'm going to say. Can I do a 6.5?
You can. I can have decimals. That's fine. 6.5. Joe and Andy, were you below a 5 or were you 5?
Below.
I was below. I didn't realise we could do 0.5s. can I go 4.5?
Fire, Jay.
I went for a 2.
Fine.
we've lost more games than we've won this year in League One.
Just about, yeah. I thought
they won 14, lost 13.
With 5 draws. Win percentage of 44% overall for the year.
1.5 points per game.
3.
It's mid-table mediocrity, isn't it, in League One?
2.
Yeah. With a hell of a strong squad.
I will say my 6.5 is from the start of this season. So I guess if I'm doing it for the year, it would be below that. Maybe it'd be. I'll stick with 6.5. I'm staying there. That's what I said. Yeah. Stick with it.
Stick with your convictions. Marcus Evans. I'll start with 5 again. Anyone higher than a 5 for Marcus?
I went for bang on 5.
And we're all a little bit.
No, I was above 5 actually. Yeah, I went 6. I've got all my bit of paper pinned to my wall. I've given him a 6. Obviously, the big thing he'll be questioned on is whether sticking with Lambert. I'm going to say that the 5-year deal was done before the start of 2020, because it was. It just wasn't signed. But I think in a year where the club has faced real financial challenge off the pitch, I think while he's not always made the right decisions, and he certainly needs to work on his public output. I think in terms of maintaining employment and keeping the club.
Well, we haven't worried for one second about the future of our club.
No,
have we?
And this year of all levels.
He's talking about £10 million hole this season, isn't it? That he's having to fill.
Yeah, and that's still the case. Like, it's costing. Yeah, they're still very much in that position. Everything else, he'd be below the 5. If it wasn't 2020, if we weren't talking the band the C word or the V word, whichever one it is, we'd be below the 5. But I think this year, I'll give him a 6.
Graham?
Scrapes a 5, I think. Yes, keeps the club afloat. And as Joe says, we've not had to worry in that sense. But I think for somebody that, in his other businesses, specialises in corporate hospitality, he doesn't always come across as particularly hospitable to the supporters. I think the good on him for the second statement, which backtracked a little bit and said maybe he's got that wrong, and he has at least acknowledged that there have been, you know, some mistakes in recent seasons, but there have been a lot of them. These are adding up now over, what, 12, 13 years?
13 years, pretty much. As of now, I think, as of the day we're recording,
scrapes a 5.
And the players as a collective, Graham, what would you for 2020, or if you'd rather just deal with this first half of the season, whatever you.
I'm going with the first half of the season. The fact that so many of them have been unavailable, I think, from what the manager has had to pick from, I'd give them something along the line. If I'm giving Paul Lambert a 6.5, I'll probably give the players a bit more than that. Maybe a 7.5. The fact that they're still, as we've mentioned, very much in the mix. Let's give them 7.5.
Yep, Andy.
For the whole year, my rating, I've given them a 5. For 2020, yeah, I'd probably go up to 6 maybe for the six for the start of this season, but over the course of the year, a 5, I think.
Joe,
I went for a 6 just because I think they've performed better than Marcus Evans, and I gave him a 5.
trying to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I've now given Marcus a higher rating than the players, haven't I? Which I think I disagree with. Anyway, numbers are numbers.
Yeah, you can use stats to
just chuck numbers around willy nilly, don't you?
Yeah, I mean it's not scientific. Don't worry. And let's end with this because depending when folk listen to this, we might be close to the new year. A prediction from each of you for whatever that might be for Ipswich Town or whatever for 2021. Joe, we'll start with you.
I went for Kieran Dyer to manage at least one game.
Wow. For the first team.
And well, yeah.
I'm trying to be specific.
Well, he's going to manage more than one for the under-23s, isn't he?
I know, that's what I mean.
Yes, Kieran Dyer to be the first team manager for at least one game, whether that's in a caretaker basis or whether that leads to more.
Okay. Andy?
Wow. Mine was a bit less broad. I think Luke Chambers is going to score the first and last goal of the 2021 side of this season. This season's side of 2021. So I think he's going to score the first goal, and I think he might score the last of the season as well. Where that goes beyond that and where he goes beyond that, I don't know. But
that last goal be a playoff final victory, Andy?
No. But yeah, why not? Why not? Why not? And who knows? Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Why not?
To complete his hat trick.
Graham, what are you thinking?
The Tractor Girls to win promotion.
Oh, that's, yeah. But a long deserved, long overdue one as well. Double promotion. How about that? Which at certain points, I think that was definitely mentioned on the phone, and I think at some point. But yeah, that would be a good way to make up for last season's disappointment. And fingers crossed they get through the next few weeks, which might be a little bit tricky as well. That is it. Guys, thank you so much for your time. Graham and Andy, particularly for, I know you've got commitments elsewhere, obviously, and Joe, obviously, a stalwart of the pod, always grateful to hear your views, but definitely always good to get external perspectives. And thank you so much for your time. Graham, do you want to tell us where we can find you on Twitter? We obviously know the Radio Suffolk match day coverage. You've got other shows, new music shows on Suffolk as well, so feel free to use this time to do
stuff. Yeah, no new music anymore. No, I've not been doing that now for a couple of years. It's so darn busy with Ipswich Town. You can tell you've not been listening lately. No, on Twitter, it's GMAC Suffolk. I'll be back on the radio on Boxing Day when we won't have any live commentary, as it were, but I'll kind of be running you through the state of play in League One. We won't even have any non-league football on Boxing Day, so it's going to be a very, very different Boxing Day for me. But yeah, that's where you'll find me. You'll find me on match days. You'll find me on Thursday nights in the new year as well, the Thursday Night Sports Social from 6 till 10. So we have an Ipswich Town hour, we have a non-league hour, and just sport across Suffolk in general.
That's grand, and always presumably keen to get people on the phone in post-match as well.
100%, yeah. No, it's no. The more the merrier. Everyone welcome. Good to hear new voices on there as well.
Fantastic. And Andy, we know all about your Kings of Anglia exploits, but you guys have got a special that you're, when we record this tomorrow, you're going straight into another one, aren't you?
Yep, double header. Is this is going out Boxing Day, right, Rich? Is that the idea? It's going out
whenever at some point.
Whenever. So our one may or may not already exist by that point, but if it does, you can find it. If it doesn't, it's still to come. But yeah, we can. I don't know what our pod schedule is over Christmas and New Year, but I will be doing much like Graham is and filling the gap without football with some stuff on our website. So yeah, give it to be confirmed. Yeah, come give us a read. But thanks for having us on, guys. It's been really good to talk.
Yeah, and your tweets, your Twitter handle, your.
Is Andy Warren with an underscore at the end because someone's already nicked my actual name, but they don't use the account. It's really irritating. I've tried to get it back, but I've been trying to get a blue tick. That's where the checkbook cash is going to go.
You were also 21 and just yeah.
Yeah, we'll see.
And is it at Kings of Anglia for the pod?
Ooh, now you're testing me. I think it is.
I'm sure our listeners are already subscribed.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, it absolutely is. At Kings of Anglia.
Promotion anyway. And Joe, what have you got coming up over? Blue Monday, we need to figure out what we're going to do. It's a little easier for us, but where can we find you? And any academy stuff happening? Is that still
going? I think the summer break is, or the winter break is here now. That the fourth round or the fifth round of the Youth Cup draw, whichever one we're in now, has been, and we either play Swindon, Bromley or the Metropolitan Police. I think the Met Police face Swindon and the winner of that tie then faces Bromley and the winner of that tie then faces us. But on the same night we were beating Fulham in the third round, AFC Sudbury were beating Bury Town in the first round 7-0. So it's the competition because of COVID has sort of gone all over the place. But we're in a really good position in that competition and that was a brilliant win against Fulham.
Yep. And we can find you and your academy Twitter at
Joe Fares and at ITFC_academy.
Excellent. And you can find all of our stuff in the usual places at Blue Monday ITFC, Blue Monday Pod Team on Insta, on Facebook, all sorts. And we'll figure out at some point what we're going to do about podcasts, given the lack of fixtures over Christmas. But this is clocking in at an hour and 58 something minutes. So we've done a bumper. Maybe 58 minutes more than I thought we were going to do. So again, thank you to Graham. Thank you to Andy. Thank you to Joe for your time. Belated or Merry Christmas whenever you're listening. Happy New Year. And here's to 2021 being a little bit more jovial, more chilled, more relaxed, less crazy, less of the C word, less of the V word. Fingers crossed for a double bubble promotion next year.
Likewise. Merry Christmas. And yeah, it's great to be involved. Appreciate you having us on.
Thanks, guys.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.